Kind of nervous. I haven't done this in a very long time. But when Pastor Michael emailed me to see if I wanted to do any kind of preaching during Lent, I saw the list. I saw the list of parables, and I saw the Good Samaritan. I was like, yes, that's the one that I want to do. This is going to be easy. Everybody knows the story of the Good Samaritan. They grow up hearing the parable. It tells you who's your neighbor. You learn what you're supposed to do in a difficult situation. And I thought it was just going to be nice and easy. But I started thinking about how does that look in modern times? What does the story of the Good Samaritan, how does it want to teach us to act today? We have services that did not exist in the biblical times, like ambulances and police officers and 911. And so if you found a person on the side of the road, put them in your car and dropped them off at a motel, you might actually get in trouble. And so I started to look at the larger context of the story. A lot of times we think of the parable and we just think about the story of the Good Samaritan. But I started thinking about the lawyer and the questions that he asked. He asked two questions, the second of which being, who is my neighbor? And that is answered with the parable. And the first being, what do I need to do for eternal life? And reading through, I found that that question was also answered in the parable. And so to make it a little more relevant for today, I'm going to retell the story in modern times and then ask another question. So imagine that you are on a business trip in a strange city all by yourself. You go to sushi for dinner, and you're walking back to your hotel. You pass by a dark alley. You get jumped. You get mugged. They rob you blind, they beat you up and leave you for dead. You're laying there. Your first instinct, obviously, call 911, but they can't. They took your phone. And so you wait there, hoping for help. Two police officers start to walk by. They're in really nice, dress blue uniforms. They're on their way to a fundraising event. They're trying to raise money because their precinct doesn't have enough money to create programs to help combat crime, of which you were just a victim of. You can see in their faces that they see you, but they need to get to this event. They need to be on time, and they need to be looking presentable. So they walk on by. Then you hear someone else walking past. They're on their cell phone. They're talking loud. You can hear them saying, I can't wait to get home and just kick up my feet and relax and, watch Netflix all night. And as they come into view, as soon as you notice that this person is wearing hospital scrubs while talking on the phone, leaving work, they also notice you. But they cross the street, walk down the other side to avoid this dark and dangerous alley. As you're laying there, you're starting to fade in and out of consciousness. And at the other end of the alley, you hear a loud bang of a door opening and closing. Two people come out, and they start arguing very loudly. You're not entirely certain what they're saying, but you can hear the words, tainted needles and impure drugs. They start haggling on a price, and then a transaction is made, and the men part ways. You start to fade out again. Next thing you know, a rough hand is putting a coat on you, pulling you up to your feet, saying, we need to get you to the hospital. It's the drug dealer. He puts you in his car, and he drives you there. Every bump on the road, he's apologizing that he can't make a smoother ride. There's just too many potholes. He brings you in, gives you to the nurses and the doctors, and stays there the whole time with you, making sure that they don't miss anything, that you're getting the best care. He sits in the waiting room as you're in surgery for hours. He's there when you get out. He hands you a piece of paper with its receipt showing that he paid your entire expenses. You didn't have your insurance card, and he didn't want there to be any complications from that. And then he goes, and he comes back when you're finally discharged from the hospital. None of your family was able to make it to drive you to the airport to go home, and no one from your office showed up. So when he offers you a ride, you accept. And as you're driving to the airport, you ask him, how much do I owe you for all the hospital stuff? I'm going to figure it out with my insurance, and I'll get it back to you. He said, no, it's okay, I don't need the money. You say, no, it's fine. I have a good job. I can take care of, you know, my own expenses. Should I write you a check? Can I give you cash? And he says, no, I don't need the money. It's fine. And you keep pressing him. And he finally says, I just did it because it was the right thing to do. I will not accept you to repay me. And you sit there silent until you reach the airport. You get out of the car. You grab your bags. And you're about to part ways. And you don't know what to say. So you do the only thing that you know that you can do. You give him a hug. And you say thank you. And you part ways. So, to me, this is an updated version of the Good Samaritan. But I'd like to ask you, how difficult would it be for some of you guys to accept that care from somebody who you see as lawless, somebody who is not bound by the same morals as you? Your care, you were literally, your life was saved by somebody who paid for it with drug money. Somebody who is actively working, you know, or actively in, So this is somebody who actively has a hand in destroying lives and families and communities and businesses. It would be hard to accept that help, knowing that you were saved in this way. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what you think of the money or the help that you received. You have already been saved. So to me, this answers the question of that the lawyer asks first. What must we do for eternal life? And the answer is nothing. We've already been saved. Jesus already saved us. There's no amount of good works, no debts to be paid. He did it because he loves us. And I feel the only thing left to do is to say thank you and to pay it forward, to show that boundless love that he showed us to our neighbors. And what that looks like to me today is not just, you know, calling 911 when you're supposed to, but, something simple as showing kindness to a stranger on the street, or as courageous as standing up to politicians who bully people labeled as others. And it may not seem as though you're expressing boundless love when you do these acts, but to the people you're showing them to, they can be felt as boundless. And so I just want to remind everybody before we go that everyone is capable of showing boundless love and being a good Samaritan. And at some point, everyone has been the man on the road to Jericho.